Lisa Scottolini is a Philadelphia lawyer who's become a best-selling writer of legal thrillers. Each of her books centers on a case involving one of the partners of an all-woman law firm. Though Scottolini has an Ivy League law degree, her books feature gritty, textured descriptions of the Italian-American neighborhoods in Philadelphia where her parents and grandparents lived. The case in Scottolini's latest book, Killer Smile, deals with a largely unknown episode in American history, the registration and internment of thousands of Italian-Americans as enemy aliens during World War II. She was inspired to write the story after discovering the program had touched her own family. In Killer Smile, attorney Mary D'Annunzio is seeking reparations for the estate of an Italian-American from Philadelphia who died in an internment camp in Montana. I spoke to Scottolini about the story and her family. Lisa Scottolini, welcome to Fresh Air.
Well, thank you for having me, Dave.
Your latest book, Killer Smile, deals with something that's new to your writing. This is the forced registration and internment of a lot of Italian Americans as enemy aliens during World War II, which it turns out touched your family. Tell us how you found out that this episode in American history had touched your own family.
Well, you know, I write thrillers, and I do one a year, but I still think that they have to stand as novels. I have as much pretense as anyone else, and so to really flesh them out and to make them real, you have to draw on something within. And I have every book. This book was different and harder and more personal because it arose in a circumstance that was sort of sad about briefly. Just 2 years ago, my dad realized that he was not going to survive cancer. And although he didn't say any of this, we don't really do third act Camille in our house, at least not on my father's side. On my mother's side, it's a complete melodrama. But on my father's side, we try to show some semblance of restraint. And he sat me down and he said, there's some papers I need you to look at. And the first paper was actually the deed to our family cemetery plot. And he said, you may be needing this. And I knew exactly what he meant, and so did he. And then he said, and there's these two other things. They are from your grandparents, and they're actually all that's left of your grandparents. Now, when someone says that to you, and you are paying lots of attention. And what he gave me were these two little pink booklets, which were looked like passports and a very soft cover, and actually documents from the 1940s and have that great old-fashioned look about them when paper was real and staples really were staples. And I said, what is it? And he said, it's actually your grandparents' enemy alien registration card. And I said, could my grandparents possibly be enemies of? And he said, well, the country. And that's when I found out. He said, this is our last family secret. And as soon as he said that, I said, this is the next book. Because that's the stuff that always touches. And basically, my grandparents, who had lived at the time World War II broke out for 30 years without event in Philadelphia, were compelled to register as enemy aliens, as were Japanese Americans and German Americans under the same act. And actually, their home was searched by the FBI in the middle of the night, as was true of lots of Italian Americans on both coasts and also parts of the Midwest.
Let me get this right. I mean, they lived on Thompson Street in West Philadelphia.
49th and Thompson in West Philadelphia.
And an FBI crew arrives in the middle of the night and searches their
house? Happened all over the neighborhoods. Knocks on the door, and they come down, and all my grandparents knew, and my dad related the story to me, was that they were Medigan. They were Americans. My grandparents did not speak English, and so they sat on their little green couch, kind of terrified. And as these men searched their house and took out with them their flashlight and their radio, by the way, not a shortwave radio, just their radio.
And why was that?
The belief was that the government rounded these things up wholesale because they would be could be used to signal enemy warships off the coast. And of course, my grandparents never left the kitchen, but it is part of a wholesale action during the war, as you know. And that was news to me, though, that it happened with respect to Italian Americans. And then my old family, and here I'm looking at these cars, and I say, Dad, why didn't you tell us? I mean, this is silly. Why would this be a secret? They didn't do anything wrong, and we know that. And he said, they were terrified. They were, from that day forward, very ashamed of themselves. You know, there's a great sense of shame in them because they loved this country so much. And so since they barely understood what was happening, they understood that they were accused and convicted all at once.
a lot of people that I've spoken to who are certainly well aware of the internment of Japanese Americans during World War II were completely unaware that this had happened to Italian Americans.
Yeah, me too.
And you didn't know that until your father showed you this.
I went to the University of Pennsylvania Law School and studied constitutional law and even practiced a little con law and didn't even know that.
So when you found this out, I mean, you didn't leave it at that, I know. I mean, you went to the National Archives. What did you learn?
Well, that's the great thing about my job. I get to educate myself. And so I subpoenaed under the Freedom of Information Act all files of individuals who were interned in internment camps. There ended up being 43 around the country during World War II and who were Italian Americans or Italian born or Italian nationals. And that response 8 months later yielded about 330 files, which is interesting given that the historians dispute about how many actual Italian Americans were interned. The numbers go from 3,000 to 10,000. So it's very interesting that that's so few files were left. And I read them all. And I Xeroxed plenty.
You actually went to Missoula, Montana to visit the site of a former internment camp. What prompted you to go there?
Well, once I got the files from the archives, it was pretty clear that I would have to do that. Because there's something about, and I don't know that it's a lawyer's respect for the actual documents that things speak for themselves, or just a normal person, which I still am. So you sort of see these actual files and photographs of people and lists of what was confiscated from them, mostly dictionaries, by the way. They were trying to teach themselves English when they were arrested for nothing. And so I said, well, if you're going to set a thriller in something that really happened, which is the first time I've ever done it, I have to go see where it was. Now, Missoula is gorgeous, right? We can posit that is stone beautiful, trees, fresh air, not enough graffiti, you know, way too much parking. I'm completely out of place, which is also a good kind of thing for this book because my character has that in common with me. And so we
we can tell readers that in the book, your character, Mary D'Annunzio, an Italian-American Philadelphia lawyer, travels to Missoula researching the case of this gentleman whose fate she was interested
in. Right. And so it's sort of an aspect of her growth that she does that, and it is of mine too. I mean, if it weren't for a book tour, I probably would never leave my house. So she walks around the camp, and she has the feeling I had, which is there is a hallowed ground feeling. I mean, you can't be a writer and not have – or an Italian writer in particular and not be moved emotionally by stuff like that. You see,
the camp is still there.
There's a little baby museum they have, which is completely charming and has lots of photographs of what it was like to be interned there. And they have preserved part of one of the barracks. You find old foundations. You find overgrown things. And also they were kind enough to let me go into the back room at the archive. So you see stuff that actually the Italian-American internees left behind. There's little opera schedules because they sang to each other.
Opera schedules.
Yeah. You know, they made the best of it. The first thing they did actually was make a bocce court out back. So the lawn is still there where the bocce, where they played, and soccer. And it's really remarkable as it happens. Because at the time, we weren't really that afraid of – I mean, all if you read the literature, and I read a lot of it, and talked to the people in Missoula, nobody was all that afraid of the Italians. In fact, they were young, good-looking Italian sailors behind bars. It begins to sound vaguely porny. You know, you're like, hey, what's wrong with this? And in fact, they a few of them stayed in Missoula and married. They were allowed to work outside the camp, and that was all good for the novel.
Did you find people still alive who remembered the internment camp or had worked there?
I did find someone who knew a lot about it, although he hadn't worked there. And he actually took me around and was just an enormously helpful guy. And I wanted to set this fictional murder, right? And I know that Italians worked in logging camps and sugar beet fields. And I said, take me to the sugar beet fields. And he said, sure, no problem. Well, we get there. What is it? It's paved. It's a Target. It's a Costco. It's a strip mall. But that's where it used to be. And he says to me, you got an imagination, use it. And I did.
So how many Italian Americans were interned at this camp in Montana?
Probably 1,000.
No.
But even that's not certain.
What kind of conditions of confinement did they encounter? Was it pretty loose? Were they allowed to go to town? Did they have any time off?
You know what's interesting, and it's true of Missoula, and it was true of the other camps as well, which is, and briefly, there are three groups interned, right? Japanese, Germans, and Italians. They're all treated differently because of our completely arbitrary reaction to them and partly because of our stereotypes about them. Happily for Italians, everybody says to me in Missoula, the Italians, they were happy-go-lucky. And so you get this kind of na-na-na-na-na-na feel. And they were permitted lots of liberties. simply because no one was worried about them. The Germans, interestingly, were did a lot of organization and work in the kitchen. So they did almost all the cooking at a lot of these camps. And so when you go to the National Archives, to just take it back a minute, you will see orders, shopping lists of coffee, milk, things that were actually rationed during the war, and see in German script how these things were ordered and regulated for the camps. They were also permitted, the Germans, to work outside the camp. Although, by the way, neither Germans or Italians were permitted to keep their wages. So this was happy-go-lucky slave labor, is how I'm thinking about it. However, the Japanese were treated differently because we were afraid of the Japanese. So they were not permitted to work outside the camp.
Your paternal grandparents, Giuseppe and Marie Scottolini, were required to register as illegal aliens.
Mm-hmm.
Their registration cards are included in the book here.
Yeah, isn't that nice?
They weren't sent away to Missoula, Montana,
no.
as the character in your book and as other Italian Americans were. The irony, of course, is that when your grandparents were required to register as enemy aliens, their son, your dad, was actually in the U.S. military.
That's right. And that's actually very – that's a paradigm. That is completely typical of the situation, as you can imagine the ages would be. And so when you go to the National Archives, you see lots of letters from people serving in the war saying – to the War Department, please let my father's in a camp. Why is this happening? Get him out. Yeah, help me do that. And not understanding.
The lawyer who's the center of your book, Mario D'Annunzio, is taken on the case of seeking reparations on the behalf of the estate of a man, Amadeo Bandolini, who died at an internment camp. Has there been any move for reparations or recognition for Italian Americans who were registered?
Actually, interestingly, no reparations were ever requested, and none were ever paid. Briefly, though, this should get some credit to the National Italian American Foundation, which I sort of found in my research, and what they did through a fair amount of education and politicking and pressure, said to Congress, "Gee, can you just acknowledge this happened? Because we know this happened and it's documented. So let's stop pretending that we don't sometimes make mistakes." As a country. And so it wasn't until Clinton's administration, actually the Congress passed an act that he signed, that acknowledged that this in fact happened. But no money ever changed hands to compensate anybody.
And it was more a matter of recognition and
yeah.
memorialization than money, right?
Which is enormously valuable, I think.
You just finished a book tour talking about Killer Smile.
Mm-hmm.
Did people come up to you with their own stories of Italian-American ancestors?
Yeah. It was amazing. And German-Americans also. People brought their enemy alien registration cards to signings. And it's because they're in the book. And some people said, we didn't know what these were until we saw it in your book. And now I get tons of email, and they're all saying, gee, I'm going to research what this means because I remember some story about this, or this happened to my grandparents too, all over the country. It's not confined to the East Coast at all. In fact, much more on the West. So it was really sort of amazing because it shows you that you can, in a very grassroots way, say, hey, this, to me, it's all about books and the commonality. You know, I write a novel that I hope works for people because it works for me. Well, if this happened to my grandparents, it might have happened to their grandparents. And so it's all kind of very from the ground up connection, mm-hmm. which is really very cool.
Well, Lisa Scottolini, thanks so much for talking with us.
Oh, thank you so much, Dave.
Writer Lisa Scottolini, her latest book is Killer Smile.